The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony, a very, very, very good morning from a very, very wet Johannesburg.
Boker Tov, from a fairly wet Israel as well. Excuse the frog in the throat. We're heading into what is around the world a holiday weekend. In Israel, it's just a weekend. And as things turn out this year, Christmas happens to fall over the weekend. So, of course, Israelis will have the day off, but for no other reason other than because it's Shabbat. Of course, Christmas not celebrated in Israel, even though people around the world might be looking towards Israel, in particular towards Bethlehem, where, of course, the Christmas story played itself out. I haven't read much about preparations for activities on the part of the Palestinian Authority. They generally like to take advantage of the Christmas season in order to bring some tourism to the Palestinian Authority, a little bit of positive attention, a bit of positive media. This year, I haven't seen much happening. Obviously, the Christians in Israel and around the area will be celebrating Christmas. And for those of our listeners who are Christians and those who will be celebrating Christmas, I send my good wishes to you for the festive season. And I hope that this will be the start of some good things, that we will have a lot of good to look back on for 2022. 2021, I think, was a little better than the previous year. But I think we've still got some way to go. So just my greetings to all of those who will be celebrating over the weekend. And I'm hoping next week, with your permission, Chair, that we're going to look back a little bit on 2021, as well as talk about the news of the day.
I'm looking forward to that. Could you give us a breakdown, if you know offhand, about the percentage of Christians that actually live in Israel?
So I don't have off the top of my head the exact number of Christians who live in Israel. It's a relatively small percentage because obviously by far something like 80% of the Israeli population is Jewish, and loosely 20% is considered to be Muslim. But the Christians, I think, are really in the single digit percentages, maybe 2% of the overall population, something like that, being Christian. Quite interestingly, a number of the Christians who are in Israel now are not necessarily Israeli citizens. Many of them are foreign workers in Israel. For example, we have quite a large population of Filipinos who come to Israel to work, particularly in the care sector. They, of course, are mostly Catholics, or many of them are Catholics. I don't know about mostly, but many of them are Catholics, and they will celebrate Christmas. My belief is that the Christian population in Israel is around 2% or thereabouts.
And, of course, the Jewish state receives massive support from the Christian community worldwide.
That's very true, especially from the evangelical Christians in the United States, but no less so from some of the Christian groups in South Africa. We get enormous support from Christian groups in South Africa, religious groups who support Israel in every possible way, in spite of some of the negative policies that are being pursued by the South African government. Many of those people also happen to support the South African government, but it is noticeable that their support of Israel at times runs contrary to the way that the South African government chooses to view Israel on international issues, but certainly a great deal of support from the Christian community. And someone was saying somewhat ironically that there may be more Christians in the United States who support Israel than the Jews who support Israel from the United States. A slightly tongue-in-cheek and perhaps a little sad statement, because, of course, we do find quite a lot of criticism coming from Israel, from the United States Jewish community, particularly the non-Orthodox Jewish community, about Israel and about its policies. And I think they get very much influenced by some of the negative press that goes around. So there has been quite a lot of work to build on that. But we definitely very much appreciate the support that comes from Christian groups around the world.
And so getting down to the news of the day, in the last 24 hours, we've seen a lot happening in Israel. The Palestinian Authority's President Mahmoud Abbas met yesterday with the U.S. National Security Advisor in Ramallah. Do we know what was discussed at the meeting?
So there are a few things that have been mentioned in the press about the meeting yesterday between Mahmoud Abbas and Jake Sullivan. Jake Sullivan, of course, being here in the region, decided to make a stop in Ramallah to meet with Mahmoud Abbas. This would be the third meeting between a senior U.S. official and Mahmoud Abbas over the past 10 days. So what we're seeing here is really a renewal of the relationship between the Palestinian Authority and the U.S. administration. During the Trump administration period, there was a complete breakdown in the relationship between the U.S. administration and the Palestinian Authority. The U.S. administration decided to cut off a lot of the funding and decided to really distance itself from some of the things that the Palestinian Authority was hoping to see in terms of the U.S. administration treatment of Israel and the two-state solution and things like that. So what we understand from the meeting yesterday between Mahmoud Abbas and Jake Sullivan is that the issue of the two-state solution was discussed. We are told that Jake Sullivan emphasized that the U.S. administration is committed to the two-state solution. I find that kind of a statement to be a relatively standard but uneventful statement. It doesn't have a great deal of meaning or significance to it, because you can say, well, I'm committed to the two-state solution without saying anything more than that. And so what about your commitment to the two-state solution? Because in reality, I think what we have on the ground right now is a form of a two-state solution, where we have the Palestinian Authority area being governed by and large by the Palestinian Authority. Certain of the aspects of the governance are in the hands of Israel, or Israel has the right to influence or potentially even control some of those issues, such as some security-related aspects, the extent to which Palestinian Authority officials carry arms, the way in which the military force within the Palestinian Authority operates. Those sorts of things have significant Israeli influence. But in terms of daily administrative issues, the governing of the Palestinian Authority, the taxes, the spending of money, the investment in infrastructure, all of that is in the hands of the Palestinian Authority. So I think Jake Sullivan's statement that the U.S. administration is committed to the two-state solution is a little empty. It's a little perhaps what the Palestinian Authority would want to hear, but it doesn't really, in my view, have massive significance beyond that. What is interesting and we noticed is that Mahmoud Abbas chose to talk about respecting the status quo on the Temple Mount at the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound, and that by that he means that really the Waqf, which is the Muslim Council under the chairmanship of the King of Jordan, needs to continue to have control over whatever goes down on the Temple Mount. So we have this ironic situation where the Temple Mount is within the city of Jerusalem. The city of Jerusalem is the capital of Israel. It is wholly under the control of the Israeli government. And yet the Temple Mount, the holiest site in Judaism, is under the control of the Waqf, which is this Muslim council, which is headed up by the King of Jordan. And so obviously Mahmoud Abbas was eager just to reinforce that the status quo should be maintained on the Temple Mount. When it comes to talking about the Temple Mount and Al-Aqsa in particular, it is the one, probably in my view, the single issue that unites the Muslim world almost without exception. If you're looking for a community that has divisions and splits and disagreements, then the Muslim world is a great example of that. But when it comes to the issue of the Temple Mount, it doesn't matter who you are, doesn't matter what you disagree about. When it comes to the issue of the Temple Mount, somehow everybody seems to unite behind this particular cause. And so, of course, Mahmoud Abbas wouldn't miss an opportunity to cite the matter of the Temple Mount in front of the U.S. administration in order to somehow try to garner support from the Muslim world for the Palestinian Authority and for the work that they do on behalf of Muslims regarding the Temple Mount. So that really seems to have been the main subjects of discussion, the main topics of discussion between the two of them yesterday. There was talk about starting a real political process in order to create an independent Palestinian country, the Palestinian state. There is a long way to go before we even see a kickoff to a process that will eventually result in a Palestinian state. I mean, I'm not ruling it out ultimately, but right now, I just don't see the political will or desire to start pushing that particular button. So I think we're likely to see not only status quo on the Temple Mount, but indeed status quo in the Palestinian Authority as well.
So we've got two feel-good stories left before we get to the 8 a.m. news. The first is one that always gladdens my heart. A woman has been appointed as the military advisor to the Israeli president for the very first time. What further details have been released about this?
So we are not told who this lady is. She is simply called Colonel N. We're also told that she's been promoted in her career from colonel to major general. She will pick up the role as the military secretary to the president of Israel. We understand that she was appointed as part of a regular recruitment process where within the IDF they searched around for someone who they thought it would be appropriate to appoint to this particular position, who has the necessary knowledge and ability to deal with the issues that would come up in the president's office with regard to the secretarial and advisory duties that a military secretary would need to be advising the president of Israel. We're told that Major General N, as she is now, is 40 years old. We understand she lives in central Israel, and we understand that she is married with two children. She holds a degree in history of the Middle East, and she has a 20-plus year military career behind her, where she's been serving up until now as the IDF Central Command's Chief Intelligence Officer. And she's been in that role, we're told, for the last year and a half. So I presume those people who know will be able to put two and two together and know exactly who Major General N is for people like me who are not intimately familiar with all of the senior brass in the military. I'm not sure who she is, but there is a picture of her with her back turned towards the camera, which I found quite interesting in one of the newspapers. But this is a great story because it does show that Israel is really striving towards equality, sexual equality, gender equality within our military sphere. We do know that girls are required to serve in the army as well as boys. That's already been a well-established fact for many, many years. But there have been accusations that even under those circumstances within the military, there is something of a glass ceiling where women are not promoted beyond a certain rank or given jobs beyond a certain level, in spite of the fact that almost half of the army, at least the compulsory service
are made up of women.
Comprised of girls.
Well, exactly. It's great to see that. And I knew she would be coming from the intelligence sector because that's what military advisors' background generally are. Great story here, considering that we're in the midst of a pandemic. We've got 2 minutes left. There was a 30% increase in the number of immigrants to Israel during 2021. What drove the increase, Anthony?
Well, I think it goes even more than that because one of the most fascinating pieces of information about this year's Aliyah process, the process of people immigrating to Israel, is that the 2021 saw the largest number of immigrants from the United States to Israel since 1973. So it's not as if they were saying, well, it's 30% up on 2020 when almost nobody made Aliyah. So it would have been very, very easy to create a record or to create an increase this year because we're starting off from a very, very low base. But no, that's not the case. And interestingly also is that immigration from France was up 10% over the 40% over the prior year, and from Russia increased by 10% over the prior year. What drives it? Well, I think that there were people who were somewhat reluctant to make Aliyah during the 2020 pandemic period. And so when we began to understand a little bit better where we are as far as the pandemic is concerned, then many people put their plans back in process and decided to make Aliyah. Also, we shouldn't forget that there were 27,000 people, Jewish immigrants, made Aliyah in 2021, which compares to about 21,000 in 2020. And actually quite a number of them also came from Ethiopia, something like 1,600 Jews immigrated from Ethiopia during 2021 as a result of work that was put in place by our Aliyah and Absorption Minister, Pnina Tamana Shato, who's done a lot of work herself, a former Ethiopian immigrant, done a lot of work to try and bring people from Ethiopia who are at risk there. So it is a good story. And, you know, when we look at the statistics, 3,000 people from the Ukraine and 7,500 people from Russia, and it's really a fascinating story that people, even under these circumstances, are very eager to come and live in Israel to make this their home. Of course, the law of return does allow people to claim citizenship who have come from Jewish ancestry the moment they come to Israel, and many like to take advantage of that. And so I think that that's a great story to end before we head into what will be a holiday weekend.
A great way to end. So, Anthony Reich, I look forward to chatting next week. You have a great Shabbat, and you'll be back on air with me next week.
I look forward to it. Thank you very much.